From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on this morning's forum, a new online exhibit called War Ink uses the stories behind veterans' body art to bridge the often difficult gap between the civilian and military worlds.
We lost 14 people in 9 months, and when I came home, I didn't know how to feel about the fact that my friends died and I was just fine. So I turned to tattoo for therapy.
On this Veterans Day, we hear from soldiers who participated in this project about the meaning of their tattoos. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's forum program. And on this Veterans Day, we welcome soldiers who are part of a project in Contra Costa County called War Ink, which turns the public's attention to the body tattoos of war veterans who have elected to have tattoos to exhibit and memorialize their experiences in the military and war. Many of these, of course, are personal and commemorate the war experiences. And we want to find out more about this. Joining us for the hour here in studio is Jason Deitch. He's a U.S. Army veteran, co-creator of War Ink. He's also part of the program in rehabilitative neuroscience that's run by UC Berkeley and the VA Medical Centers of Martinez in San Francisco. And welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Good to have you. Also good to have Mike Ergo. We're going to welcome him, an Iraq War veteran, here with us in studio as well. Served in the U.S. Marine Corps, now a social worker and readjustment counselor for the VA. And we welcome you to the program as well. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael.
Also going to say good morning to Heather Hayes, who is here with us as well, Iraq and Afghanistan war veteran with the U.S. Air Force, now transitioning into the Air Force Reserves. Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you.
And Russell Toll, an Iraqi war veteran, Army veteran, working on his PhD now at Stanford and works at Etkin Neuroscience Lab on imaging technology to diagnose combat trauma. We welcome Russell Toll to the program as well.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you all for being here and thank you for your service to this country. And let's begin, Jason Deitch, with you on this Veterans Day. A lot of these stories needed to be told, but they are told in ink. And in many respects, I suppose they're told in ink because for a lot of vets, it's difficult to find the language or to say things and tell these stories and get those emotions out there.
Yeah. Warfighter culture is not a culture that's big on expression or emotionality. So veterans, and I think soldiers on active duty, are kind of pushed towards finding a secondary mode of expression, a secondary language. And tattoos in the military have become that secondary language. It was something that my partner Chris Brown and I noticed. And we started to notice the change in the quality of the art. We noticed the intensity of the storytelling that was going on. And we realized that what we were looking at was a doorway, a very unique doorway, into veteran culture.
It also offered a doorway or a portal or some connection between those who served in the military and society, civic society. Yeah.
Our main goal, actually, with this entire project was to provide a bridge between the civilian and veteran cultures. Given how difficult the communication has become, and we get constant comments from the civilian world about, I want to help veterans, but I don't know how. I don't know how to talk to them. And veterans themselves, as a culture, have a very difficult time knowing what to expect from civilians in conversation, etc. And what we realized was, given how commonplace tattoos have become in the civilian world, and given how long the tradition has existed in the military, we realized that we had stumbled upon a shared cultural trend. And that would be something interesting that both people could then talk about.
That's fascinating. It's also fascinating because it's really, I mean, we all talk about expression through art in one form or another as spectators, as consumers of art, or as aficionados, appreciators, whatever. But some of this is really very subtle and amazing art.
Yeah, we've gotten, not that there isn't a lot of it in the veteran community, but we've gotten very lucky with the participants that we had. The degree of metaphor that is used, the type of metaphor, the imagery that's used in place of words, the messages that are being sent, the stories of loss, the stories of experience that are all being shared are amazing. And as are the people who decided to have the courage to step out of the cultural box and help us tell the story.
Now, let's talk to some of those people. Let's hear some of those stories. And Mike Ergo, let me begin with you. And again, Mike Ergo is an Iraq War veteran from the U.S. Marine Corps, now works as a social worker and a readjustment counselor for the VA. You got tattoos before, during, and after.
Yes. Well, I got tattoos after I got out of boot camp. And it was kind of a journey of what I was feeling at the time, and starting out with a Celtic cross just to represent, you know, my faith and heritage at the time, and journeying to a big skull, a motivational tattoo with a USMC, United States Marine Corps, saying born to fight. And I was really optimistic and had not experienced war yet. And then changing to some more tattoos reflecting being sad or confused about my experience there. And there's so much about combat and war that's hard to process because it's almost an information overload. And so trying to make sense of some of these memories is sometimes better expressed through pictures or other media, and tattoos are perfect for that.
Well, I'm not seeing any tattoos. Everybody's well covered up in here, but
yeah.
You've got this St. Michael and the Dragon tattoo. Yes. Can you talk about that?
That was a tattoo I got in 2005.
It was after your second deployment, I believe, yeah?
Correct, yes. In 2004, I deployed to Iraq for the second time and fought in a battle called Operation Phantom Fury, which took place 10 years ago this week. And it was a very, very intense battle, the biggest the U.S. forces had seen since Hue City in Vietnam. And I had a tattoo of a St. Michael stepping on an insurgent that we had come across and faced. And it was something that, coming back, being diagnosed with PTSD, I'd seen a lot, and with intrusive thoughts. And I, you know, there was no room to talk about these kind of things back in, you know, the United States and civilian culture. And so it was a tattoo born out of frustration that I had a lot on my mind that I couldn't express. And so I had it drawn on my arm.
Some would think that you wouldn't want to be reminded, especially if you're going through PTSD, especially every time you look in the mirror. But in some ways, you needed to express this. Huh? That's really what it was all about.
I did. And it at the time, I didn't have a choice of what I saw in my thoughts and dreams. And so it was a way to almost force the conversation or force that experience with others in a way I couldn't verbalize. And now as I look back at it too, it's just a reminder of where I was at that time and what I was going through.
And let me congratulate you, a new father.
Yes, thank you. My daughter turned 1 year old this year.
Exciting adventures up ahead as a father of daughters, rest assured.
That's what I hear.
And we're going to hear stories from all of those who have graced the studio and joined us this hour. I thought we'd hear also little bit as we go and talk to Heather Hayes and Russell Toll and the people who are here with us, and talk more with Mike and Jason. Here's some cuts we have about War Inc. Here's Jeff Slater, who was in the Army in Iraq.
When I went to war, I wanted to be Joe Rambo. You know, I wanted to man the machine gun. So my exposure to violence on that level became second nature. It was almost like breathing at that point. It was just something you did. And it changes you. It almost makes you invincible at the same time. It almost brings you to nothing. You lose your ability to interact with the world, to understand feelings and emotions, love and care and trust and treatment of others is so far down the line when it comes to survival and winning. It's surreal. It feels like a dream for a long time.
Heather Hayes is also here with us in studio. She's an Iraqi and Afghanistan war veteran with the U.S. Air Force, now transitioning into the Air Force Reserves. When Jason Deitch talked about all this culture of tattooing, does it hold as much for women who see combat and are there on the battle lines?
I definitely say so. I'd say probably about 75% of the females I know in the military have quite a bit of body art when it comes to tattoos.
Tell us about your body art. I mean, what did you decide to have and when?
Well, I started getting tattoos about 11 years ago. I got my first one 3 days after I turned 18. I was ready to do it. But I've kind of used tattoos, I'd say, as just a map of where my life has gone. Most of that being in the military. I served for about 10 years. So you can kind of see my transition and what I've been through. I guess it's my uncle pointed it out. Like, my tattoos have kind of gotten darker as the years have progressed and my time in the military has gone on.
Darker?
Just in terms of imagery.
First. You don't mean darker in the sense of looking at them and seeing the darkness or anything?
Kind of just like, in the beginning, most of my tattoos were colorful and like nice imagery. And then I kind of went on to like the skulls and just more deeper meaning, I think, that has...
Is it safe to say that you're haunted more then, that's part of it, as you go into the service and maybe feel gung-ho and then you get distance from it and you get older and things change?
I would just see these kind of darker images and just feel like I connected with them, I suppose.
Can you describe some of those?
I have one of my newest pieces that I just got finished on my arm is a chick, is a female. she has a very beautiful face and this long flowing hair that's peacock feathers. And then the other part transitions into a dark skull, kind of morbid almost. And that was just a piece that I really connected to because people tend to look on the outside and see a certain image, whereas on the inside, you can just feel really just dark and...
So that was important for you to convey, really, what you were feeling.
Yes.
And people do have this... I think this is probably true for all of you. You know, you're all up against all these public perceptions, you know, oh, you know, you served in the military, therefore, and they fill in those blanks and they don't necessarily have ability to relate to your experience or to empathize in a deep way. So sometimes it's just getting it on the skin that makes the difference. You were deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, pretty actually did some volunteering for road convoy duty. That's high risk stuff.
It was. In the Air Force, I was a vehicle mechanic, which is a typically male-dominated career field. So I kind of got caught up in the whole wanting to prove myself that I could pull my weight, be one of the guys sort of thing. And somebody had told me in my previous deployment when I found out we had a convoy team, they said, well, you're a female. You can't do that. And I knew I was deploying the next rotation, and I said, I'll be on that convoy team.
Well, you proved your stuff. Again, Heather Hayes here in studio. Now, transitioning into the Air Force Reserves, served in Iraq and Afghanistan with the U.S. Air Force. And before we go talk to Russell Tull, who's also with us, I thought we'd hear from another veteran. This is Ryan Lava, who was in the Army stationed in Iraq, and he talked about how war taught him to focus on the extreme.
There's nothing you can really do to prepare for war. You know, you sit with your company and you go through drills and stuff like that, but there's no training that'll do that unless it's live. So you do your training when you get in theater. And in theater is nothing. You can't bottle that and sell it to the public. There's a constant that's always there about little sleep, being able to get up and go at the drop of a hat. You get up and you go because you have to. You get up and you do. You just go and do. You have to go to extreme ways in order to do military stuff. So when I got home, I got a Marine pistol made by Tiffany. So all this is jewels and stuff. I saw it and I was like, I need that. That's extreme. And I went, it's perfect. Just extreme way of making it.
Hearing from veterans on this Veterans Day and talking about the use of tattoos to share war stories with a number of people who have been involved in a project, an online exhibit, by the way, which you can go see on our website just by going to kqed.org, or you can go to warinc.org, see the photos and also the trailer of what we're talking about here. And Russell Tull is an Iraq War Army veteran, now working on his PhD at Stanford and working at the Etkin Neuroscience Lab on imaging technology to diagnose combat trauma. There's a lot on your back here. I mean, we could almost say guys have your back. You've got dog tags of a lot of guys you serve with as part of your tattoos.
Yeah, that's right. And four of them, four dog tags are for the two soldiers from my company. We lost our EOD tech, who I was pretty close to, that we lost at EOD's bomb squad. And one of another soldier from my company who I was closest to, Jake Velosa.
And you were a platoon leader, we should mention.
I was.
Yeah. And the sense is that you couldn't even get all the dog tags on there. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not a small guy either. There's plenty of canvas back there. But from our battalion, there were 25 other men who were killed. And to try and get all the dog tags back there, it took me, 2 years of deep thought and reflection about what tattoo I wanted, how to create it, because the purpose was to be a memorial, since, this war is still ongoing. Our memorial won't be around for a long time. And this one, one of my most sacred possessions is my body. And this, I wanted it to be ingrained in me and become a fossil of that memory. And that association and that pride I felt to be in the company of these gentlemen. So, I went over this with the artist, a few times, and, through an iterative process, we arrived at what I thought most adequately reflected my feelings. And I left, some of it up to him, because I felt there should be a random, non-determined component that was to be directed by fate alone.
There's a fantastic novel you may know by Tim O'Brien called The Things They Carried. It's about a platoon leader named Jimmy Cross, and now you're carrying them with you. I don't mean that in sense of it being onerous. I mean you're carrying.
I definitely am carrying them with me, and the tattoo is praying hands for them, and those 25 other men are represented by stars that form a halo around those hands, and the hands are holding a rosary, and from that rosary are those four tags that I talked about earlier. But on the scroll that surrounds them is Latin abitus non oblitus, and that is Latin for gone but not forgotten. And that I needed that, it's in your mind every day. Not a day goes by. I don't think of them, but I do know that as time progresses, I get older, I get slower, I change in a lot of ways, and I wanted that to be the unchanging part, where that memory is scorched into my flesh. And I was very decisive about where it was going to be. I like it on my back because I don't see it every day, and I can only see it if I want to. If I have to, look for it in a mirror. But
half of your back, in fact, isn't it?
And it is. And you should have seen my mom when she saw it. We're not tattoo people, so it was a little hard for her.
That brings up an interesting question, actually, because there are all kinds of associations with tattoo people. I mean, people think of the circus. They also think of convicts. I mean, how has that affected those of you who have these tattoos? I mean, they speak to deep parts of yourself and survivor guilt and all kinds of things, post-traumatic stress, what you endured and what you went through and where you've been and what you've come through and all that. But at the same time, you've got all the, again, those associations. You're building the bridge, Jason, that you're talking about. You have to make people realize there's more to tattoos than what they may have in their minds. Yeah,
right.
That's a big part of it, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think the image of convicts
and rock stars too,
and rock stars most definitely with tattoos is faded maybe just a little in the last, I'd say, 10 or 15 years. And as tattoos have become even more mainstream, that it seems that more people can identify with them, even just the average person. So I remember as a child seeing my grandfather, who was a Navy Korean War vet, with just an undershirt on, and he had just old school tattoos everywhere. And at that point, I said, "Wow, yeah, that's pretty intense. I didn't have the vocabulary to understand what I was seeing at the time.
It used to be more in the Navy than any other branch of service.
Yes,
the rites of passage of getting a tattoo. But I'm also struck by, just because I know some of your stories, and it's a sense of what art does. I mean, it's giving order to chaos. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's more than just memorializing and trying to memorialize something that was really in your experience. It's also finding some sense of order, isn't it?
It's an attempt at an explanation.
Yeah.
It's an attempt at a record. It's also an attempt
to... That's why people write and paint and sculpt.
Yeah.
Because
that's the thing about it. There's a lot of it that doesn't... Vocabulary doesn't cover. Words don't express. So you can't get it out in speech. And there's a lot of parts of it that people aren't interested in hearing sometimes, or you don't feel, at least. And so it has to come out, and it has to happen.
And so often, was it therapeutic getting these needles and getting these tattoos in a way?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, it shouldn't be denied that, like, the pain is part of it.
Yeah.
It's like when people cut themselves, almost taken to a more pathological kind of off on the other side of the continuum. Yeah.
The one thing I think to add to your point about bringing some semblance of order to the chaos, especially of traumatic memories with PTSD. Or people just coming back from combat, trying to understand that they are a lot of fragmented memories, and trying to make sense of things that seem like they're tumbling around in your head. Doing that through journaling, doing that through music, poetry, art, and tattoo is a way to bring that order and to help with the recovery and therapeutic process of fully reintegrating back into the civilian world.
Well, I'm going to at least make a attempt here to integrate our listeners into this discussion and hear from them. In fact, that we would like to hear from you, especially if you're a veteran, your thoughts about, well, what you're hearing here on this Veterans Day, but also some thoughts from those of you who may have tattoos to share war stories or to share personal stories and just how a tattoo serves you. I mean, in many ways, that's really at the core of this discussion, and we do welcome your phone calls. You can join us now. Our toll-free number available to you is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Many ways to communicate with us, and we would like you to join the conversation. And as we go out, let's hear from Victoria Lord, who was in the Navy in Iraq, and she talked about how the Navy became her family after coming from a broken household.
I never really had a very strong family structure previously. So when I joined the military and there was structure, there was a roof over my head, there was food on my table, and there were people that were going to stand behind me no matter what. They taught me the real meaning of family. I have met the most amazing mothers and fathers I've ever seen in my life. And they realized that when I first came into the Navy, I was a little bit broken. And every time I went to a new command, these strong people would reach for me.
Again, veterans, tattoo artists, people who have had tattoos, people who have served this country, this is Veterans Day. We're bringing these two together and trying to bridge the gap, as Jason Deitch said, between what veterans experience and what the public perceives of them, and we welcome you to the conversation. Toll free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Veterans using tattoos to share their war stories. Well, an online exhibit, War Ink, showcases those tattoos and the stories behind them of veterans from the wars of Iraq and Afghanistan. And we're talking to a number of them. Jason Deitch here with us in studio, co-creator of War Ink, and Mike Ergo, who is an Iraq war veteran with the U.S. Marine Corps, Heather Hayes, an Iraq and Afghanistan war veteran from the U.S. Air Force, and Russell Toll, an Iraq war army veteran. And we welcome your thoughts and your remarks and, well, your involvement in the conversation. Again, number of ways to join us, toll-free at 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQEDForum. I want to get your response, those of you who have assembled here in the studio with us, to an email that's come in from different perspective. In fact, a few different perspectives here. This is Mike from Mill Valley who says, I did two tours in Vietnam. I'm 180 degrees from what your guests are saying. I spent the last few decades trying to forget what I went through. I want to forget rather than be reminded of what's in the mirror.
I think Jason, (clears throat) this is an important point to address. I think that A, that there's a different generation of veterans right now, but it does need to be addressed that the Vietnam-era veteran came back to a country that not only outright rejected them, but castigated them publicly, privately, personally. They were atrociously treated by the government, by the Veterans Administration. They were given no resources, no supply, no support for 30 years, essentially, for almost 40 years. So the perception that he has about trying to forget is an understandable one.
And there are people in Iraq and Afghanistan who served who want to forget, who don't want a tattoo on them to remember. I mean,
the only argument I would have with that is that it doesn't work.
Let me read another constructive critical comment from a listener who writes, thank you, on this Veterans Day. What is the best way for us to show real gratitude to veterans? Is it by honoring tattoos, or do we have a responsibility to ask about actual issues, such as, one, what are concrete obligations in terms of employment and post-combat medical care for veterans? Mm-hmm. What real sacrifices, yellow ribbon bumper stickers on an SUV don't provide anything to veterans, will we make to ensure their reintegration into civilian life, too? Were their sacrifices worth it? That is, are we and the places we sent them to safer than before our intervention? That is an ugly but necessary question on this Veterans Day. Three, if their service did not make us or anyone else safer, but in fact created bigger problems, ISIS, etc., what obligations do we citizens have to future veterans to end counterproductive interventions? Tattoos, all well and good, but veterans deserve more meaningful appreciation from the citizens for whom they sacrifice so much.
I think that was a very poignant email, and I think I appreciate the idea that someone would want to engage civically in response. And were these sacrifices worth it? Definitely, if we can learn from them. If we can take what we learned and apply it to our, you know, our civic duties as civilians to work on issues and to make sure that, yeah, the lives we lost and weren't in vain.
It's Mike Ergo. Another comment from a listener on our website named Bob. Am I the only one who is tired of the worship of current and former military personnel? We've had a volunteer army for decades. They're not doing something they were forced to do. They're mercenaries for our corporations. Other occupations are just as valuable, if not more so, and have higher fatality and injury rates. Our wars haven't kept me safer since World War II, not the Korean War, not the Vietnam War, not the countless invasions around the world. Quit the hero worship, and maybe we'd get less volunteers for our wars or corporate profit.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of anger in that email, and I appreciate to a degree where he's coming from on that, because I don't consider myself a hero, and I would think most of the persons who have had a similar experience to mine don't really see that either. I definitely serve in the company of heroes. I see what he's talking about, this hero worship. It's a very dangerous path. Now, the appreciation that the large majority of people express to veterans, especially on this day, that totally appreciate that and their support. But it is so dangerous to let that become an automatic thing where we just we let that glorification lead us down into non-hesitant paths when it comes to war. So I do agree with a very sliver part with what he's saying. But this, coming back to why is it important to talk about tattoos of all things? Why are we not talking about the VA backlog and, you know, the mental health issues? Well, there's got to be a starting point where obviously we have a chasm. And there's to find those points of mutual connection, the bridges between those two populations that we have, between civilians and veterans. I think having a good foundation and something that others might see as a trivial thing, these tattoos, it's at least a starting point for a conversation that can lead to those civic changes that our previous email or would like to see done.
It's enabled a lot of you to tell your stories, and stories have to be told and should be told. And another listener writes, the images of tattoos are quality work, which makes me curious if there are some ink artists who connect better with military, which in turn produces such beautiful storytelling work. Thank you, veterans.
Can I add one other point?
It's Jason Dyche.
To the prior, the person talked about hero worship. And it's a little bit ironic because in the veteran community, there's, I guess, three stereotypes that we have that are the worst. You know, the yellow ribbon, commercialized support of veterans, the ticking time bombs of post-traumatic stress disorder. And then ironically, is being treated as heroes. Having our agency and our personal identity erased in the face of some World War II-esque poster of a man holding a gun and staring proudly off into the sky. No veteran that I know, actually, is comfortable with or likes being called a hero.
I don't have never known any heroes who are comfortable being called a hero, who are real heroes. Right?
Like, it also allows the person who says, oh, these are our heroes, to then have no personal connection whatsoever.
You put them up on a pedestal and they don't have their humanity anymore, right?
Yeah.
Let me go to our callers and see what they have to say. Understood. Aaron is our first caller. Good morning, Aaron.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Karen from Santa Clara.
Yeah, hi.
And I want to let all veterans listening know about Project Welcome Home Troops, because this was researched by Dr. Emma Sapala out of Stanford, and this course is offered for free to all veterans and a very small free to their significant others. It's very successful at alleviation of PTSD in concert with their other therapies and protocols. And the website is projectwelcomehometroops.org, and very good as a solution for those who do not find health care as approachable. You know, for many veterans, they don't seek out health care, so this is not in the health care setting, but yet it is very successful. And I wanted to let all veterans on this day know about it.
Okay, you have, and we thank you for that. And on this Veterans Day, again, I would like to hear from some veterans about, well, your experiences and what you have done, if not tattoos, to memorialize them or to remember them, if you want to remember them. We heard from a gentleman in Mill Valley who said he wants to not remember them, and that's understandable for some people, but certainly there are ways other than art that they can be commemorated and that one can particularly, well, bring to mind or heart, whichever the case may be, what one went through and lost, particularly in the way of comrades in arms. Here's a listener who writes, these tattoos are beautiful works of art as well as a focus of healing power. I can visualize this strong work in other media as well as such as painting, collage, and sculpture. I think we've been saying that. Harold writes, I'm trained as an anthropologist. Tats can be seen in the context of sacramental wounds that are a practice across many cultures. You see tattoo and you know there was voluntary suffering to create it. It's an external manifestation of the event or situation where it was created.
That's an excellent definition.
That's a very good.
I really like that.
Yeah, yeah, it resonates for all of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, as an anthropologist.
A plus.
Exactly.
Also, want to get at, you know, I talked before about giving order, and, you know, here we have this anthropologist talking about sacramental wounds. In many respects, you come back often, particularly from combat, with other kinds of wounds, psychological wounds. And I wonder how much of this ultimately has to do with, I mean, people can say, you know, this is talking about tattoos on Veterans Day. We can talk about far more important things, as this listener did. But in many ways, this is a part of the healing process for all of you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But it for me, it's also a compass where the best memorial I could give and the best tribute to the sacrifice my brothers made is to lead a life well lived and not dwell in the past, but maximize the gift they gave me. And that, you know, my tattoo, its primary purpose is a memorial, but it also directs me and pushes me from the back to keep going, where that I'm not going to, you know, to play the part of victim or feel sorry for myself, because I did volunteer, and every experience I had, I chose to have, in retrospect, I would do it again. I've seen, you know, so many beautiful things, the broadest spectrum of human emotion and experience that you can only get at in our most primal state in war. And it did come at an incredible price, but that it is such a powerful and sustaining experience that I'm thankful to have. And that's what drives me to do the work I do.
Well, there's also, I think you've talked, Russell, about having been a warrior and the anger that you had. In many respects, I think all those who have done service went through a good deal of that, as well as the terrible loss and mourning over buddies and pals and comrades, as we've said. But ways to get over that anger sometimes may have to do with creating, and that's what you're doing on your body. Now, you may wake up one morning and say it's time for the lasers. I don't know. You know? But at this point, it's safe to say this is with you for life, and this is a life commitment, what you've got on your skin.
Mm-hmm. I've never had any of the veterans in this project or any of when the discussion of tattoos come up. I haven't had any of them ever say anything remotely like get rid of them or do away with them. I think they have, all of them have a potent meaning to them now, even the ones that they're a little like, not at a great stage of my life when I got that tattoo.
Yeah.
But what's important is that I have that marker. I have that log in my journal. Heather has said some very, really brilliant things about this is a way to record the experiences of my life and where I was. And even if they're not pleasant, they are things that tell me where I was in my life.
How does that work for you, Heather? Talk about that a little. Expand on that, can you?
I've never been excellent at expressing emotions. And so sometimes it does make me uncomfortable to talk about my experiences, especially, I mean, friends, family, just because, number one, I don't want the pity that went with the experience. Sometimes you just want to express it because you're feeling it, but people do sometimes feel the need to feel bad for you or, oh, I'm so sorry you went through that. And I chose this experience. I chose to do something potentially dangerous because I believed in it. And my most recent tattoo I actually got a week ago is a graffiti-esque style of a man in a business suit with his grenades ahead, or his head is a grenade, and he's about to pull the pin.
Wow.
And it just kind of illustrated my transition into being a civilian, where you can be dressed up in this suit, but there are just times when you just...
Still got a grenade in your head.
You just want to blow, and you can't.
Right. I think something important about that. Veterans come back to the civilian world. You know, to become a warfighter, it takes about anywhere between 6 months and a little bit longer, right? To become a civilian again, it takes one day, right? One single moment. And you go from a world where the outside world and the inside world match up perfectly. Everybody is doing the same thing. Everybody follows the same norms. Everybody believes in the same ideals for, you know, almost to a complete degree. And then you wake up one day and you have all of those beliefs and norms and things still, and the outside world has none of them, right? So it's almost a way to speak to the purpose of War Inc. in a way is like, this is things that need to get talked about. These are experiences that we need to talk to you about. We need to come all the way home, and to do that, we have to be a part of your community.
Well, now I am seeing some tats as you've rolled up your sleeves here. What do you have on your arms, Jason?
I have two sleeves. Both of my entire arms are tattooed. This is my newest tattoo, actually. In Latin, it says, "First I served, then I healed, and now I serve that cause."
That was as recent as when?
I got that about 5 months ago.
Yeah. Again, we're talking to a number of veterans who have had their tattoos showcased really to tell their stories, and they have been participants in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You can see this by going to our website, kqed.org, or you can go to warinc.org and not only see the photos but also see a trailer. Here's a listener who writes, I have PTSD and physical scars from childhood and tattoos, many self-inflicted, quote unquote, were and are a way of asserting my own agency over my body. I wonder if there's an element of this in the stories of military folk who subsume so much of their selves in a group dynamic.
Well, I mean, part of the military
Mike Ergo, yeah.
process of indoctrination once you join the military is becoming part of the group and having individual identity stripped away. So I think it is a definitely a part where someone can express individuality in such a controlled environment.
But it's also more than the individuality. It's I'm reading all of your tattoos to some extent and what you've said in your stories. It's your connection to the group. I mean, in many ways, that almost eclipses your own sense of individual identity. It's the loyalty to the memories of what you've served and who you serve with.
Yeah.
And it's part of the storytelling process. I mean, something that fundamentally separates us from other creatures is humans' ability to tell stories. And the stories we tell are of sacrifice, of hardship, of love, of camaraderie, of a shared experience that bonds people for life. And that's the message that is important about War Inc. is that we're not here to celebrate war. We're not here to celebrate violence. We're here to celebrate a common human experience.
And you're not even here to celebrate tattoos necessarily.
Correct.
Really,
yeah.
Right? I mean, I think that's important to communicate too. But and I didn't mean to say when I'm talking about the individuality here that there isn't great personal significance to having these tattoos, yeah. Because I know there is, but. The sense of what's called the esprit de corps, the sense of serving with others and just having that bond, band of brothers, band of sisters, whatever.
I think that those relationships, by the way, are they're a very important part of the veteran struggle, I think. When you have friendships in the military, friendship is an entirely inadequate word. I mean, I would argue that the relationships you have in the military are by far the most intimate, intense, loyal, caring experiences.
Well, we heard that. Listen to that veteran talk about it's family.
Yeah, and you know, ironically, of course, when you get out of the military, the problem is like everyone goes to a different place, and the relationships that should be the most supportive, they also have the context of what you've done together, where you've been together. So those relationships get hard to maintain. But it's also something that affects how veterans and civilians talk to each other. When we go to have relationship, after having these kinds of relationships, it's often very difficult for us to navigate the details of, oh, wait, you said this, but you didn't really mean it, or you do mean it.
Well, it's also that you haven't walked in my moccasins.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of that, or my boots. Let me get another caller on here. Okay. Dale, join us. Hi, you're on.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I was a Marine Corps vet. I am a Marine Corps vet, really? Vietnam era. And when I got out of boot camp, I was, of course, very, very proud and went out and got a tattoo from who was then the most famous tattoo artist in San Francisco, a guy named Lyle Tuttle. And he did a terrible job of it. I was with a camouflage helmet on it. Apparently, he'd never seen camouflage before, so he ended up doing what looked like a checkerboard on the helmet, even using the color red, which would never show up in a camouflage helmet. Anyway, after a time, I realized that I did not want to spend the rest of my life advertising that I was a trained killer. So the first thing I did was I had Void stamped across it. It was a tattoo, of course, but it looked like it had been rubber stamped across it. And then I thought, well, you know, that could get me in trouble because any other former Marines who see that could take offense, and you know, next thing I'd know, I'd be in a beef. So I had it removed with laser surgery, and that was in the early days of laser dermatology. We're talking back in the late 60s. And so it took about 35 minutes to put the tattoo on and 3 hours to take it off, literally burning away the tissue with the nurse there with a vacuum sucking away the smoke. I'm now left with a third-degree burn scar, which is really preferable to the tattoo that was there. Hmm. But poor judgment, you know.
Well, you've lived to tell the tale.
Yes, indeed, I did. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for that. Good to hear from you. And
I hope Lyle Tuttle is adequately embarrassed.
Mike Ergo, let me go back to you, if I may, because part of your story involves a response to, chemical tech, yeah?
Yeah, that was one of my earlier tattoos, and this is right before we deployed to Iraq for the invasion. And I, being the newest member of my unit, during chemical training, I was told that I was designated as someone who, in event of a gas attack, if they weren't sure it was totally all clear for everyone to take their gas masks off, they would take away my weapon and my gas mask and monitor me. And I laughed because I thought it was a joke, but they were serious. So I had a choice then to, cry about it or laugh about it. So I ended up getting a tattoo on my back that just said expendable to kind of, I accepted the reality that I was government property at that point and decided, this is how it is. So nothing I do is going to change that. So,
get any comments on that expendable tattoo from higher ranked officers? Or
no, my grandparents and parents don't like it, of course, because they remind me that I am not expendable. And, it was kind of tongue in cheek, but
also sounds rebellious, though. That's why I asked about maybe commanding officer. What do you mean you're expendable? We don't look at you like that.
Yeah, it wasn't exposed too much being on my back, so nobody saw it too much, unless I was in a pool, I guess.
And I'm going to go to another caller. And Richard, that's you. Thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi. I just thought it was very poignant, the tattoos and the military, because I'm a veteran of the British Army, and I worked in a branch of the military where we weren't allowed to identify marks. But I recently got honorably discharged, and today I'm actually going to get a tattoo, and I'm going to get two initials for my children. And I would just say it's been, as part of NATO, it's been an honor and a pleasure to serve with the U.S. military. And also, I think it came up earlier, we're not heroes, we're just doing our job. And I just want to say thank you to all the veterans, all the soldiers who served in all the countries.
Thank you for that. What are you getting your tattoo is going to be? Your children, either names or pictures or what?
I'm actually just going to be two initials. So they're both their names beginning with T. So I'll have two T's on my right shoulder.
The reason
is, and it's part of the sort of commemoration, is that every time I, get up in the morning and go and have a shower, I see the two initials. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing with like people's pals and buddies. It's like we say in England, lest we forget. We don't forget these people. So it is more or less like a memorial.
Well, good luck with the tattoo, and thank you for calling. Good to hear from you, Richard. I appreciate it. And let me go to some tweets here that are coming in. Heidi writes, thank you for your program on tattoos. Hearing the veterans speak about the reasons for their tattoos helped me understand something that has puzzled me for several years. My granddaughter, then in her early 20s, found her murdered cousin in the back seat of her car, and about 2 weeks later, she showed me a large tattoo on her upper arm, praying hands with her cousin's name in memory. Now I understand. Love and peace to the veterans and all victims of war. Here's another tweet. I marched against Vietnam, Art writes. My son fought in Iraq. He's disabled due to PTSD. We've spent the past year learning from his choices and his condition. The soldier is not the war, yet the soldiers bring the war home with them, which everyone needs to know about and face. I've come to a much better understanding of my son and his veteran comrades and have a deeper respect for what the veteran men and women go through and the courage it takes to return to the complications of reentering civil society. My hat's off. Signed, a grateful father. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff still means something to you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It means a great deal.
That means a lot.
And yet, when you you were talking about Vietnam and how disrespectful often. Mm-hmm. Some of the stories about spitting on Vietnam veterans were probably overly inflated and became the stuff of urban legend, but there were certainly incidents where they were called baby killers and things of that sort. And when people say to you, yeah, come on, you, like we heard from an earlier, you guys signed up for this, mm-hmm. you were a volunteer, you weren't conscripted or drafted. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you own that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely.
And so when somebody says, I've heard listeners say this on air. You know, the whining of these veterans, you often hear that word used. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're not using it against you people. But you do hear that, especially about PTSD. And you hear people say, well, you know, I didn't hear about PTSD in World War II, and, you know, now I'm hearing about it. In World War II, they were fighting Nazis, you know, who wanted to control the world and put people in ovens and all that sort of thing. How does that weigh in terms of your own sort of working through what you served and what you did?
Well, PTSD is nothing new. That's been around for
a while. It was called shell shocked in the old days.
It's had more than 90 names. One of the earliest ones from the 17th century among Swiss soldiers is nostalgia, excessive nostalgia. So that there's been an attempt to put a name and an adjective on it, but it's been a persistent component of soldiering that lasts with warfighters, and it's, like I said, it comes by different names, but it's a force of nature. It's a invisible force that pulls you back to those memories, whether you like it or not, and you can choose to do with that event what you will. You can either let it pull you into that well and, you know, succumb to that pity and despair that's in there, or you can invert that force and use it to drive yourself towards something amazing.
Well, thank heavens we know a lot more now than we did back in the day when, mm-hmm. say, Freud was talking to Austrian soldiers and that sort of thing. And I know, Russell, you're doing work on this, and continue the work you're doing. And thank you all for being with us. This has been a most informative and, in many ways, very moving hour. Again, thank you for the service you've done to this country.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Jason Deitch, Mike Ergo, Heather Hayes, and Russell Tolb. And for all of us at KQED, have a happy, have a memorable, have a respectful Veterans Day. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.